Chapter 1. Frost. Jake knew nothing about objects of power, except for one thing, that they existed. He hadn't known it until that very moment as he stood just an arm's length away from one. The knowing was visceral. He could feel its power thrumming through his bones, both threatening and inviting. It demanded his full attention, and for a moment or two, he forgot the pain in his heart that had drawn him to that hallowed place. The object was an old-fashioned inkwell on his dad's desk. Its bulbous, brass surface mirrored his amber-coloured eyes and shaggy blonde hair, colouring him with a golden hue that made him look even more lion-like than he already did. 16 years old and moments away from chaos. He reached out for its lid. His fingers tingled. An inch from contact, energy surged up his arm. A sharp pain prickled between his eyebrows. He winced and pulled away as the edges of his vision fractured like shattered glass. Part of Jake was desperate to flee from the object, but his curiosity was too powerful. He clasped the lid and pushed. With a blinding light, the inkwell snapped open. Its innards gaped wide into a terrifying portal, and a monstrous force hauled him through it. Compression, expansion, an almighty flex of energy, one followed the other in the blink of an eye. Then silence, so intense that a shiver ran up his spine. He was standing on a grassy plain between mountains he didn't recognize. It was dusk and cold. A great tension hung in the air. Then Jake felt it. Something was racing towards him, though he couldn't tell what, loping through the grass, powerful, relentless, inescapable. He saw it too late. It came out of nowhere. A great white wolf, blue eyes blazing, leapt for Jake's chest. With a surge of adrenaline, he swung away. Except he was no longer outside, but back on the train, where he had been just moments before, dreaming of the inkwell in his dad's study. Jake had knocked over the tea of a passenger, but he didn't notice. He was light-headed. His eyes felt different, sharper, deeper seeing, and he had the strange sense that the wolf in the dream had in some way leapt inside of him and gifted its vision. Jake gazed out of the window into the dusk. The train was racing between the wintry mountains of northern England, but something wasn't right. Despite being inside, he felt bitterly cold. Again, he recoiled. As though the window didn't exist, a light passed through it. The light of a lantern, held up in scrutiny of Jake's face, the glimmer of an eye within its flame. Holding it was a ghost. Somber-faced and grey-robed, he appeared like an old knight without his armour. The only colour was his ageing red beard. "It can't be!" panicked Jake in thought, gripped by a fear he had long forgotten.
"Jake!" said the ghost in a tomb-like voice.
His presence grew powerful.
"You must die!"
The ghost spoke with chilling calm, just as it had in Jake's nightmares when he was a boy. It had spoken the same words. Next, the ghost would pass inside of Jake, and he would sink through his own grave, then freefall into writhing darkness, until he awoke, yelling.
"You must die,"
repeated the ghost as it passed through the window.
"Die before..." "No!"
barked Jake and struck the pane of glass. The jarring partially brought him back. He was about to strike a second time when the lantern flashed so brightly that he was forced to shield his eyes. Something grabbed his shoulder. He spun around. The ghost was inside the train. Jake jumped to his feet and swung at the lantern, but struck something else. The ghost had disappeared. In its place was the conductor of the train. He, along with the other passengers, was regarding Jake as though he were mad.
"Steady on, mate. You all right?" he asked.
His heart racing,
Jake peered out of the window into the fields of snow, though found no sign of the ghost, the wolf, or anything else unusual. He took several deep breaths and turned back to the carriage.
Yes, yes, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Sorry I hit you. I was just dreaming, stammered Jake, passing his ticket for inspection, desperate to restore some dignity.
Let me buy you another tea, he said to the man beside him, who declined the offer awkwardly. Confused, shaken, and embarrassed, Jake sank back into his seat. An elderly woman sitting opposite studied him with a dubious expression before returning to her book. The weight of the rest of the passengers heavy upon him, Jake sought respite in the gathering darkness beyond the window.
Could I have really seen it? He wondered.
Part of him wished to dismiss it as imagination, but it had felt too real.
What's the wolf got to do with that bloody ghost? And why has it come back into my life now? Die before... Before what? A certain date? A certain place or person?
Jake regretted having struck the window, wishing he had been brave enough to hear what the ghost had had to say. He was so preoccupied that when the train next jolted to a halt, to his surprise it was Harkonnmere, the station of his hometown. He jumped up, grabbed his bag, and made for the door. No one but Jake stepped from the train. It had started to snow again, the large flakes covering the station in a stillness so enchanting that Jake joined it, barely conscious of the train departing. He gazed up at the mountains that he had spent most of his young life climbing and drew a deep, calming breath. By the time he had exhaled, it all came flooding back. The pain, sharpened by the joyous memories of all the homecomings that had gone before. This time, however, someone would be missing.
Your father has died in Egypt.
Jake hadn't heard the rest of what the headmaster had had to say just the day before. He had bolted from the school in the Scottish Highlands, raced up the nearest mountain, and roared to the sky until he collapsed exhausted, shivering, sobbing, and feeling decades older. It was the second time death had knocked at his door, the first when he was only a baby. That time it had stolen his mother. Now that it had his dad too, all that remained of a home was a wandering granddad and a farm manager who was so eccentric that most thought him mad. As grief threatened to consume Jake, he recalled what his dad had often said, that life is a great gift no matter what it brings us, that our responsibility is to understand the heaven-sent lessons and to evolve, not to suffer. Jake also recalled something he had once read in a book on Native American Indians. Death is a sacred passage, life on earth just one part, tiny yet vital, of a far greater reality. Jake's sadness fought back. Such a grand idea was wishful thinking. We arrive at random and we leave at random, he decided. And though a small voice deep inside of him cried out in protest, the blunt thought suited his heavy heart. A breeze blew from the stillness and swept about him so softly that it felt like an embrace. It was swiftly followed by a stiffer breeze. Bitterly cold, it blasted from the opposite direction and whisked up the snow. With a shiver, Jake pulled his coat tight about him. He felt a menacing presence, as though someone were standing just behind him, staring at him intently. He spun around. There was nothing but snow, yet his skin tingled and his heartbeat sped. Jake stood his ground, waiting to see if something emerged. When nothing did, he set off for the stairs and the station exit. The sight of the high street of the old market town was a welcome one. A big Christmas tree covered in lights had been erected next to the war memorial, while carols and roasting chestnuts suffused the dusk with a cheer so rich that Jake was almost swept up by it. But not quite. He couldn't shake the feeling that he was being followed. As he proceeded along the pavement, He glanced back several times, though each time saw nothing unusual. Why would anyone spy on me? He wondered. He couldn't think of a good reason until the image of the ghost filled his mind. Jake stopped. He scoured the crowded street, refusing to be spooked. Finally, Jake gave up worrying about it, helped by the sight of a chocolate eclair. He was staring through the baker's shop window, wondering whether to buy one or not, when a voice from behind him made him jump. "What are you doing here?" it demanded. Jake spun around to find a boy standing uncomfortably close to him and immediately took a step back. The boy looked about Jake's age and had a similarly lean build. But where Jake's charm was rustic and rugged, the other boy was striking. He had a wild and exotic air, dark rakish hair, tanned skin, and hazel eyes that sparkled with such mischief that he reminded Jake of a fox. "What am I doing here? What are you on about? I've never met you before." "What? You mean I have to know you in order to ask you a simple question? Ha!" cried the boy, and caused Jake to take another step backwards. There was something about the boy's presence that both captivated and repelled Jake in the same instant. Not only did he seem older than he looked, but there was a sprightliness about him, as though he might leap into a tree at any moment. He was so vivid, so alive, that he seemed unreal. "Well," pressed the boy, "what are you doing here?" Jake didn't answer. He was thinking back to the ominous sensation he had felt since disembarking from the train. "What's the matter? Are you one of those pompous types?" accused the boy. "Emotionally repressed? Is that it? After all, it's a common enough disease. Or do you think you're too clever for me? Ha! Well, you might be clever by school standards, which isn't saying much, but you're hardly wise." "Have you been following me?" broke in Jake, who would have excelled at school if he applied himself. But he found it all too dull and irrelevant, and so did the minimum, and saved himself for sports. "Me? Follow?" barked the boy. "Certainly not! I'm not one to follow. However..." He trailed off in a mysterious tone and looked in the direction of a rooftop across the street. "I have a feeling someone was." Jake followed the boy's line of sight, but saw nothing but snow dancing about the slate-tiled roofs. "Why would anyone be on the roof in this weather?" said Jake, struggling to take the boy seriously. "And why are you bothering me? I'm really not in the mood." "Bothering you?" exclaimed the boy. "More like, why am I, Frost, for that is my name, bothering myself in talking to you? And as for your not being in the mood, one doesn't rise to the glittering challenges of life by not being in the mood. One remains relaxed, but ever alert to the signs and synchronicities, ever ready to respond in an instant. Have you never heard of the forbidden fruit? Know what it is? I bet you don't."
"I've never thought about it," replied Jake amid Frost's barrage.
"Of course you haven't. It's presence. That's what's forbidden. Presence and spontaneity, the two keys of life. And anyway, who are you to ask me a question when you've yet to answer mine?" he drove on mercilessly. "But it doesn't matter, because I already know what you're doing here. I just thought I'd give you a chance to be interesting, which, not surprisingly, you've failed miserably. But I'll forgive you if you buy me a cake. How about a custard tart?"
Somewhat embarrassed by the encounter, Jake looked about to see if others were watching, but no one paid them the slightest attention as they scurried past with hoods and umbrellas up. "You're mad," he said flatly, any idle curiosity as to Frost's identity giving way to the call of home. He made to leave, but Frost blocked his way, a flash of danger in his grinning eyes. Jake was more than capable of looking after himself, but he considered fighting a last resort, and especially with someone like Frost. Unlike oversized thugs, who were usually slow and ran off crying after two hard punches to the nose, Frost was lithe. Behind his every movement was the quiet confidence of someone who knew his strength.
"Mad or not, what I really am is a synchronicity," said Frost, breaking the awkward silence. Won't you wake from your dreary existence and explore it?
Just then, a text message rang out from Jake's phone. Hoping to use it as an excuse to break away from Frost, he withdrew it from his coat pocket. No sooner had he done so than Frost swiped it from him. In the same movement, he tossed it over his shoulder.
Jake watched in disbelief as it spun poetically through the air and disappeared down a road drain. It couldn't have been a more perfect throw. Jake would have congratulated Frost had it not been his own phone that had cost a small fortune. Instead, it took all of Jake's strength to keep his cool.
"Why did you do that?" he growled.
"One day you'll thank me for that," said Frost airily. "Probably as soon as tomorrow."
"Not before you've replaced it," warned Jake.
"That's precisely what I've already done," declared Frost.
Not sure how to deal with Frost, Jake said nothing.
"I've replaced it with reality."
"What are you on about?
This is reality," said Jake, gesturing to their surroundings. "You clearly have no idea about reality," declared Frost. "If you did, if you knew how to truly see and hear, then you'd realise that what you call reality is just the surface of it. The greater part is hidden beneath it, within it, along with great power. Not power as most people know it, which is child's play and makes one look ridiculous, but real power. Some call it magic," explained Frost.
Jake looked down at his empty hand and back at Frost, about to offer a succinct opinion on Frost's version of reality. But Frost cut him short.
"The first thing you must do, however, is to stop dumbing your wits with things like phones and TV. Rubbish things which clutter you up with nonsense and fear, when you need to be empty and trusting to let power flow through. Not to mention how their poisonous signals are killing off the bees. And when the bees are gone, when the trees are gone, humans will also disappear."
"Magic. Power flowing through us," laughed Jake.
"Of course! Magic is not the privilege of just a few, but available to all. But these walking dead," said Frost with a sweeping gesture to the passing public. "Look at them! Zombies! Robots! Certainly not human! Too afraid to even look each other in the eyes! There! Look at that idiot!"
Frost was pointing at a boy about their age. He was gazing into his phone, writing something, barely looking where he was going, while a girl stopped what she was doing and watched him pass. Her expression was one of wonder, as though she had felt something deeply mysterious. A sparrow swept under the boy's nose. A dog barked. A passerby clipped his shoulder. All were signs to alert him, but he missed them all. Not even a dump of snow freeing itself from a roof and covering his phone could grab his attention. He simply wiped it away and continued to type while walking. Frost barked with laughter.
"He's so busy looking online for a girlfriend, one that'll drive him mad, that he's missing one right beside him that'll give him joy."
Jake studied the girl. The deeper he looked, the more he saw her beauty. Not fashion beauty, which was boring, but real beauty. It was in her manner and movement as much as anything else.
"See what I mean?" said Frost with a grin.
Jake looked back at his empty hand and had to concede that Frost had a point.
"Look, I'm not interested in power. I just..."
"Oh, aren't you?"
challenged Frost, his eyes glinting.
"I know you are. Everyone is."
A chill ran up Jake's spine. He thought of the wolf and the ghost and their powerful eyes, and also wondered at the mysterious appearance of Frost. Could they be connected? He wondered. Frost's presence was so strong, however, that Jake couldn't think straight. He craved to be on his own in order to make sense of it all.
"Look, I've had a long day. I'm heading home," he said. "So if you wouldn't mind..."
"Home?" barked Frost. "That's exactly what I'm talking about. Your real home. It's right here, in this moment. But to find it, you must be silent. Stop thinking."
"Silent?" scoffed Jake. "You hardly strike me as silent."
"Oh, but I am. I may be talking to you, out of pity, I might add, but on the inside, I'm thoroughly silent.
How else could I sense a gust of wind just a moment away to your right?
Said Frost, and a gust blasted from an alley and ruffled Jake's hair.
Or know that a raven is about to land on that sign over my right shoulder.
To Jake's astonishment, a raven did just that.
Tell me, raven, said Frost without turning to see it. One call for yes, two for no. Is what I say true?
The raven released a single resounding call, its beady eyes fixed on Jake.
And tell me something else, raven, except this time, because our friend here is such a doubter. Call five times for yes. Should he be honoured that I, Frost, am taking my time to offer him some guidance, that I am, as far as he's concerned, a gift from the gods?
Without a moment's hesitation, the raven released five quick caws and flew off through the snow. As Frost stood smugly, Jake stood stunned. Finally, he found his voice and decided to put Frost to the test.
You said you knew why I was back in Harkamere. You're back for a funeral, stated Frost matter-of-factly. Your dad's. He was the Egyptologist mentioned in the papers. Died under a collapsed wall while doing some restoration or something. Not that I believe anything I read in the papers.
His words struck Jake like a stab to the heart.
You're doubtless wondering how I could possibly know so much about you. Well, I can see it, plain and simple, continued Frost, leaping ahead of the anger behind Jake's sadness, so that in order to keep up, Jake had to do the same. For those of us who aren't so superficial, it's quite normal to see deeper things, and there's a big cloud of death about you. The bigger question, however, is why are you really back? What's really calling you from the void created by your dad's death?
What do you mean? Asked Jake in a sceptical tone, though his interest had been piqued.
Your soul's mission, of course, your quest, announced Frost. Very few wake up to their destiny, so wake up!
Though part of Jake wanted to walk away and be alone with his sadness, there was a growing part that couldn't. A part that cared not for gentle manners or sympathy, but truth, no matter how brutally delivered, and waved away anger as childish. As for his feelings about Frost, he was so arrogant that it was almost enjoyable. And there was something else about him, something Jake couldn't quite put his finger on, for which words like charm and charisma weren't quite enough. Whatever it was, the longer Jake spent in Frost's company, the more powerful it became. He looked back at the rooftop across the street.
Did you really see someone watching me?
He asked, his trust and suspicion of Frost in equal measure.
I felt something, said Frost.
Like what?
Oh, an assassin, probably, said Frost nonchalantly, as though it were the most ordinary thing in the world.
Though he thought Frost's reply absurd, Jake suffered the same ominous feeling he had felt on the train platform.
Who are you? He asked. Why have I never seen you around town before? As I've already explained, my absent-minded friend, you've been wandering around fast asleep, just like everyone else.
Where do you live then? Which school do you go to?
Go to school? Exclaimed Frost. After all I've said, do you think I would go to school for my education? Ha! Certainly not. Nature is my teacher, because unlike you, I don't wish to be programmed like a machine, filled with lies by fools. As for home, I live in a house larger than the Queen's. My father is extremely rich. The rest you know. I'm devilishly handsome and far brighter than you.
After what you said about power, I wouldn't have thought you'd be interested in money. Makes one look ridiculous, isn't that what you said?
Oh, I'm not interested in it, declared Frost. Nor is father. To him, it's just a tool for making others look ridiculous.
If your house was as large as you say it is, then I would know about it.
Another statement which only goes to show just how blind you are, announced Frost. But at least you can see cake. Come on, let's have some.
Again, Jake felt himself split in two. His adventurous side was fascinated by what else Frost might say. He was exhausted, however. Above all, he was keen to get back to the peace of the farmhouse and see his granddad.
Another time, he said. I expect our paths will cross again. Only if they're meant to, replied Frost, his eyes sparkling with knowing.
With a nod, Jake passed Frost.
Watch out for bats!
Why? Said Jake, turning back for a moment. What have bats got to do with anything?
If you see one, either while awake or in a dream, you know, under auspicious circumstances, then it means you're in for a shock, a big one, an initiation, in fact.
I've already had a shock, said Jake, ironically.
Oh, no, you haven't. Death's not a shock, or it shouldn't be. It's the most natural thing in the world, the pinnacle of one's life. Physical death, that is. Death's a time for celebration. There are, however, other types of death, ones that are far more interesting. Anon, Lord Burton!
Another chill ran through Jake. He was about to question Frost when a second gust of wind appeared, and Frost was momentarily concealed in a mini blizzard. By the time it cleared, he had disappeared.
Lord Burton, what's he on about? Muttered Jake, for there were no peers in his family.
He must mean landlord, now that Dad has...
Jake struggled with the admission.
Passed on. Frost probably assumes the farm is mine.
Jake stared into the space where Frost had stood. It had been such a bizarre encounter that he wondered whether it had actually happened. And yet, like the sighting of the wolf, he secretly hoped it had. A strange light had been shone into the darkness of Jake's grief, and while it had, things had seemed less final. Shaking his head in wonder, Jake finally set off for the bus stop. Halfway over the bridge that crossed the river, he suddenly stopped. A bird swept past him, so close that they almost collided. It was odd, because it was night time and still snowing, and birds usually took shelter at such times. It happened again, except this time there were several birds. They appeared from under the bridge and flew about him in a tight circle with great agility.
I don't believe it, he gasped. Bats!